welcome to the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs. You are here. Hello, everybody. How are you today? This is Nicole, and you have reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Welcome to it. Today, we are doing a real-time heal. So those of you familiar with the podcast have heard these before. Basically, what we do is I grab somebody in the center of their journey, and they've written to me. They've told me a little bit about where they've been, where they are, where they want to go. And we hop on the podcast and do some more intense, some more light, a therapy session, a completely cold open, no preparation therapy session where they can share with me sort of like the level of understanding they have with TMS, the details of their story, and then I can kind of jump in for some personal guidance and also for some teaching for you guys. And so I love real-time heals. I'm looking to do more of them. So if you are inspired by this, let me help you with the criteria of real-time heal. I'm looking for submissions. You can write to me at thecureforchronicpain@gmail.com. I'm looking for submissions with the following criteria. I can't have people who have literally just started this work and have no experience of feeling the change in their bodies and the reason why, even though I am beyond behind you, is that in terms of, you know, good radio, I need there to be some foundation so I can do the work with you for everybody who is listening, and they can help, you can help people do the work for themselves at home with a little bit of knowledge and progress on the front end. However, a real-time heal obviously is not just a straight-up success story. I want you to be able to tell me where you've been and then what you need, you know, what kind of guidance you need. If you're curious about different facets of the work, if you're stuck on something, maybe, you know, there are three facets of my work: believe, do the work, and patience and kindness for yourself. So are you stuck on one of those pillars? Do you feel that you've taken yourself as far as you can go and now you've hit a roadblock or a plateau? These are great content for real-time heal. So if you find yourself there, just send me an email, thecureforchronicpain@gmail.com. Tell me a little bit of your story, just a couple paragraphs. The long, long ones are just, they're kind of hard to read because I have so many emails coming in. So a couple paragraphs, and then just tell me where you'd like to go with it. And we will contact you if you are chosen for a real-time heal. So today we have Heather. Heather is so wonderful. Heather, I so appreciate your honesty and your vulnerability and your willingness to show up. And we had just such a great conversation about migraines and about neck pain, but also just about what it's like to overwhelm ourselves, to maybe sign up for jobs or commitments that we thought were going to be what we wanted, and then we find ourselves in the middle of things that are not what we wanted. Maybe our soul is crying out for something different, and our soul doesn't know how to cry out, so it cries out through our pain. There's so many great things to explore here. So I'm excited to share this real-time heal with you. In addition, where we are right now is we're a couple weeks away from Omega. So as you know, I do one live retreat a year as of now. I don't know if I'll add more in the future when I'm living on the West Coast, but right now my only live in-person retreat is at the Omega Institute, June 25th through the 30th, 2023. And come join us. You have a couple weeks to sign up. And I am so excited. We have the craziest lineup this year. We have Christina Sarno, Dr. Sarno's daughter, coming to guest lecture with me. We have new therapists. We have completely new content. And of course, always the foundational content that I teach. So you are going to get every single tool you need for your toolkit and meet many other people that are doing exactly what you're doing. The strength of community, the strength of camaraderie, the way you feel not alone and held and connected when you go to a place like Omega, certainly in my retreat, is second to none. So I'm really excited. I look forward to this week all year. So if you're looking to sign up, just go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com, click on the retreats tab, and you can click there to sign up, or you can go right to eomega.org and search Nicole Sachs Freedom from Chronic Pain. That is the name of my retreat. Okay, guys, one more thing in addition, although we have already had the migraine deep dive virtual retreat, if you missed it or if you were hoping to go, we have the retreat recording available for you. So just hop over to my website under retreat recordings or go to my link under retreats, which is the Eventbrite link for the virtual deep dive, migraine deep dive, and you can get it there. And you can also get it on my Instagram bio, which is at Nicole Sachs LCSW on Instagram. Follow us there for great content and really great community. Okay, my loves, always so good to be with you. I'm really excited to share this real-time heal and enjoy my conversation with Heather. Hello, everybody. I'm here today with Heather. Welcome, Heather.
Hello.
I'm so glad you're with us. So here, a little background about Heather. I received an email from her detailing her journey, and I was just really inspired. And the end of the letter, she said, "And I still have some more work to do," and listed some areas. And I thought, you know, this would make a really great real-time heal. Because for those of you out there who are writing me all the time with real-time heals, I need to start with people who have some experience with the work, or else in 1 hour, we will never get to anything that is of use for a podcast audience. But a person like Heather, who's already done so much and then wants to take it further, is just the perfect example of a way that I can bring this message and really help people. So Heather, I'm going to hand it over to you for you to share your experience. I know it was really hard for you and you've come such a long way, and I want to hear all about it in real time, and then we can take it deeper with you.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm super excited to be here, and it's crazy to think about how far I've come since all of this started for me. And you know, I'll kick into my story, which is that it started in January, but really we know that it had been I think coming to this point for years actually. So in January, I went on vacation for the first time in 8 months, and 2022 overall was a really stressful time for me and a lot of change. I moved into a new house that my husband and I bought. I took over a new role at work and had like finally made it onto the executive team. Yay. And I was like, right. I was like, this is such a big moment for me. And like, this is, you know, so important. And, you know, what exactly what happened was that, you know, I got into the role and was just working like crazy, and I barely took any time off. And I was all the boundaries that I had once set around, like, you know, taking my lunch break and working, you know, standard bound hours had like gone out the window, because I was like, I have to, you know, prove that I'm here. Like, I have to prove to everyone like that I can do this and that I, you know, deserve this role. And I think it really is what sparked me going into this, like, this health journey that I've been on. And I wasn't working out. I had gained a bunch of weight. My diet wasn't great. And I knew my mental health was suffering, but I didn't really, like, when I was in it, I just didn't really know what was happening to me because I was in it. And so people would be like, you need to take breaks. You need to do all these things. And I'd be like, yeah, but I have like all of these other things to do. I have a to-do list that's like a mile long. Like, who has time for that?
Right, right.
And it was challenging. And then I went on vacation and I was like, okay, I'm going to relax. It's going to be a week of me, my husband and my dog. And in Maine, we had like rented this cabin on a lake and it had like a hot tub and, you know, it like a sauna. And so I was doing all of the things. And that's when I started to have these migraines. And I had had migraines before, probably like 3 years ago is when they started. And it was always during a time of high stress for me, even though like I tried to look for any other trigger that it might be. I was like, is it my eating? Is it all these things? And I would get 2 migraines in a row and then I wouldn't have them for months. I would almost forget that like I had ever had migraines. And the night we got there, I like immediately, as soon as we walked into the house, I had a migraine and my hand went numb. And I got these zigzags across my vision that like I just had to like close my eyes and lie down. And then I got another one 3 days later. And I was like looking at the TV and I was like, oh my God, I can't see anything. Like I have a blind spot. And then when we were driving home, I had my last migraine and it like catapulted me into this like state of frenzy because not only did my hand go numb, but half my face went numb as well. And so it was just really scary. And we were in the car and I was like, oh my God, do I need to go to the hospital? Like I just.
Yeah. It's terrifying when things get that physical.
Yeah. And my fingertips were like tingling like crazy. And I couldn't really figure out what was happening to me. And it was just, I was really scared. And I think that whole first week, all I remember is just being really, really scared. I went to my primary care doctor who referred me to a neurologist. And it was a neurologist in New York City who probably sees like, you know, 20 of me per day. And she was like, yeah, you have migraines. Here's some medicine. Like, see you never. Bye.
See you never.
And I was just like, I couldn't, and I feel like I hear this a lot when I listen to the podcast, like I just couldn't get over it. Like I couldn't just accept that it was migraines. Like I feel like I had to look for so many other answers. And like right alongside the migraines, I started having horrible neck pain. So like the back of my head, my neck was like really hurting. I couldn't really sleep because I was just in this like incredible amount of pain. And it wrapped around my head and my, like, if it was on my face, it probably hurt. Like my teeth were hurting. My nose was hurting. Like I just couldn't really do anything, but like I was in this incredible pain and I tried to go back to work. And then I started having these like panic attacks in the middle of the workday. And so like, I'm in this pain that like just wouldn't stop. And I'm doing the thing that I know I shouldn't be doing, which is like Googling like crazy, should, you know, like head pain, like nose pain, mouth pain. Like I'm, you know, diagnosing myself with all of these things because my anxiety is just so bad. And the tingling fingers just like didn't go away. It didn't go away. I was like so anxious. I kept seeing like floaters and spots in my eyes, which I think is just my normal floaters that I've always had. But because I was so like hyper anxious, I noticed them.
Yes. I've had that exact same experience, by the way.
Oh my God. Isn't it? It's crazy. Like
it's crazy because we all have floaters. But once you are in that space where you're hyper vigilant about your health or about what you notice and what you see and what you feel and taste and smell and all these things, every noticing becomes a reason for panic.
Yes. And that's exactly what was happening to me. Like I would, and you know, my husband was like watching me because I would like look outside and then I'd look inside because I was like, is my vision going now too? Like I was just like, everything is crashing down. It's really how I felt. And I was like also having this, like at night, I would feel this like twitch in my foot that just like wasn't stopping and a twitch in my thigh that like wasn't stopping. And it got to a point where I was like, okay, I was like, let me find another neurologist just to get a second opinion. And I started going to a physical therapist who the minute I walked into her office was like, okay, like you have really bad anxiety. And she was also like, and where did your neck go? Like, she was like, where is your neck? Like, I can't see your neck because I guess I had been holding my shoulders so high up in my ears that like I had kind of crunched my whole neck. And she was like, okay, we're going to work on this. It's going to be fine. And so for around 3 months, I went to physical therapy every week and it was like a 2-hour train ride back and forth. And that's when I discovered you. I was on the train and I had started following all of these anxiety therapists on Instagram because I was like, this is better for me than WebMD and Google,
right?
You know, the Dr. Google. So I started following all of these like anxiety resources and I found you and I was like, let me listen to this podcast. And like, disclaimer, I had never in my life listened to podcasts before. Like it was never my preferred method of like listening to things. I just never did it. And I started to listen to one of your podcasts and I was like, oh my God, could this be me? Like, could this be like, what is happening to me? Like, oh, it makes so much sense. But I was just because I was like so in it still, I had this like disbelief still. I was like, look at all these.
Of course.
I was like, look at all these people that are like healing and that are doing better after years of pain. I was like, could that be me? No, it can't be me. Like, I'm special, like in some way.
Oh my God. It's so funny how every single person feels the same.
Yes. And like, I think what I started to do was I went way back into like your early episodes and I started listening to like how to journal speak. And I started listening to your own story about insomnia and anxiety and migraines. And then I just like had a whole bunch of your podcasts on like on my two playlists. And I just like listened to them, all of these train rides. And it became this like therapy for me almost, because as soon as I got on the train, I would feel really calm because I would be like about to put a podcast on and the pain would go away. It was like, it was so wild because, you know, after being in pain consistently for so long, it's like, as soon as I sat on the train and like put a podcast on, I felt fine. I could see fine and I felt fine. And it just like really sparked me into like going a little bit deeper.
Well, yeah. And I just want to point out here how beautiful it is, the example you're giving about letting your body be your proof. Because what I say to people all the time is, this is just a theory until it takes residence in your body. And when it does, that's when you become open to doing the real deep healing work, because you're like, wait a second. If something were wrong with me that was not fixable, I would not be pain-free on a train ride because I was listening to a podcast that was giving me hope. Like it's really so instructive for us to be able to let our bodies be our proof. So thank you for being so laying that out so well.
Yeah. And like, I still remember when I like it started to get better, I had been doing a lot of like physical work with my body. And I had been doing this work, and like I downloaded Curable, and I started reading the Howard Schuberner books. Like I really was like, I was just like trying to read and learn as much as I could, because I was like, if this is the way out, like I need to know all the tools. You know, I was like, I need to know all the tools. And one of the things I did that was probably like the best way for me to like, I don't know, really believe it, was I created a list of all the times I hadn't felt like I was in pain over the last couple months. So there was like, there were just these moments where I can remember, you know, being on the train, being at a friend's wedding, and like, I was fine. I wasn't in pain. I didn't like notice any of my floaters and my vision. And the more I cataloged those events, the more I believed, and the more that I was just like, this is absolutely it. And you know, it makes so much sense. And even the Howard Schuberner book, where he talks about like all of the ways that you can try to identify if your pain is neuroplastic. I was like, you know, I think he has like a list of like 10 things. I think 9 out of 10 I had, like I could check off. And I was like, this is like, it can't not be true at this point, because like all of the signs are pointing there. And it was just this like real aha moment for me. I was on a walk with my dog and I was listening to like how to do somatic tracking. And I was like, this is it. And I was like, and I really just have to start believing this so that I can like get through the rest of the work that I have to do.
Yes. Yes. I love it. All right. So where does that find you in your journey? Like that place that you just described, how far in the past is that? And where are you today? So we can talk about how to help you further.
Yeah. So I think really that was the end of March, beginning of April. And I still do Curable, pretty much every other day. I'm on a really good cycle with it. And today where I'm at is I'm back at work because I also went on a health leave. And right before I went back to work, I had 2 migraines because it's like my body, I think, was anticipating.
Of course.
Being back,
it's fight or flight. Yep. It's anything that puts you into fight or flight. If your nervous system deems your emotional world as more dangerous than a physical manifestation, it will pick the physical manifestation. It picks the less dangerous option. That's, you know, the whole point of the nervous system keeping us alive. And so the predator of the fear of going back to work was deemed more dangerous than getting a headache or two. And maybe the headache would slow you down and put you back in a dark room, and the nervous system would feel, as I say, safe in the unsafest way. And so that's what happens. But when you start to be able to anticipate that and know it's coming, then you're like, oh, I see. And you can put your arms around your nervous system in a proverbial hug and say, I get it, baby. I know we're scared. I know you think we're not safe, but we're okay, and we can do that. And this, that we can do this. And that kind of self-soothing is what keeps you moving in the right direction. And eventually you don't even get that pain before stressful events.
Yes. And, you know, I think I feel like I know that, and I still have some like fear, I think, about the migraines and some fear about the pain that's like lingering for me. Because even, you know, last week, you know, I was thinking about doing this podcast, and I was also, you know, I'm back to work, and I'm like, I'm working. It's not the same because I stepped down from that job. And I think that was the right move, because it wasn't, I don't know. It just like, I thought it was what I wanted, but it really wasn't. Like, I think it wasn't what I want. I thought I wanted to be like leading a team the way that I was. And like, maybe that's for me at some other point, but just where I'm at now, I think it was like a really smart move for me to leave the role. And you know, I felt a little bit of anxiety last week because I'm back to doing some normal things. Like, I set up my garden and I was painting my deck. And I think doing all of this physical activity that I hadn't done for around 4 months, really. And I felt like this one creak in my ribs, and I spiraled into this like fear cycle again. And I think it wasn't as bad as it was 3 months ago, because I sat down and I was like, okay, we know what this is. We know that we're scared because we're feeling something physical again. Like, we get that. I get that. I totally get that. And like, we're safe. Like, we know we're safe. We know that, we know what this is. We know we've been cleared of any like medical thing that could possibly be happening to me. And, you know, like, that's just where we're at. And I like, that self-soothing that you talked about is so important to me. And I have like some mantras that I say to myself every night at bedtime, because I wasn't sleeping for so long, and now I'm like sleeping perfectly fine again. So I know it works, and it takes like both, I think, some diligence and like keeping up with it, but then also re-believing it when I'm like back into the fear cycle, and I'm like, am I sure that this is really it? I go back to my notes and I'm like, okay, we know what this is. And it's still hard sometimes, for sure.
Well, yeah, of course. Of course. So I have a few questions. My first is, how much journal speak are you doing? Tell me about your journaling practice.
Yes. So really how I was doing journal speak, because both I listened to your podcast and I downloaded some of the resources, and I had this like, when all of this started, and I'm working with a therapist weekly who's like super wonderful, I don't know, I feel like this may resonate for some people, but I was like, okay, I'm gonna go on health leave, and I created this list of all these things I wanted to do. I was like, I'm gonna like learn Spanish, I'm gonna do all these things. Meanwhile, like, I could barely get up off the couch, but I had created a list of like all the things I wanted to do. And my therapist looked at me and was like, you can't do all of those things right now. Like, you need to focus on getting better. She was like, I know you really like, you want to live so badly, but like, you have to focus on getting better and figure out what that path is going to be for yourself. And like, I kind of scoffed at her at the time and was like, I don't know. I was like, I don't know if that's like what it is. I feel like I need to be structured. I need some structure. So what journal speak has looked like for me, is I sit down and I do like really unstructured writing of whatever is like going on in my head, whatever's going on like in my body, whatever like memories are like resurfacing for me at this current moment. I would write it all down, either in my phone in like a really unstructured way if I was like out and inspiration hit, or on my computer, and then I would delete it. I would say I've gotten like a little, like, it's interesting, the last 2 weeks I've been doing it a little bit less, just because like I was in such a good rhythm, and now I just like kind of fell off the track a little bit. I think I was doing things in my life, and it just became a little less important, and a little less of like a practice for me. So that's kind of what it has looked like for me.
Okay, that's really helpful for me. And that's a really great opportunity for me to help you and help anyone out there listening with the most basic brain science that is the foundational understanding of TMS. Okay, so essentially here's the situation. You're in your early 30s, right?
Yep.
Okay, so you've had X number of years of being conscious. Let's just say 25 to 27 years of being a person who was super aware of her environment, you know, developmentally. And in those years, and we might get to this a little bit, you've had a certain nature, a certain childhood, certain level of experience, a certain level of natural way that you meet the world, meaning are you a fear-based person? Are you a super overstimulated person? Are you a shutty downy person, right? We're all any combination of these things. And all of these things come together to form your core experiences, which of course inform your core beliefs about yourself, which once again inform your experiences, because our personality is the lens through which everything that happens to us is filtered. So all of this is going on, and then you have this reservoir inside of you that I like to say is, you can envision a science beaker between like your lower abdomen and your chest that sits inside of you. And every time we have an adverse experience, somebody hurts our feelings, something's too stressful, we're hating on ourselves, we're disappointed or sad or scared or ashamed or triggered, there's like a ladle of liquid dumped into this reservoir, and it goes up, 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 up. Now, when the reservoir reaches maximum density and threatens to spill over, what it's really threatening to do is inform our conscious brains of how sad and scared and overwhelmed and terrified and despairing and angry and rageful we are inside. And that is deemed by our brains and our nervous systems as a decidedly dangerous posture, because the way we perceive danger is if something's not controllable or if something's not surmountable, our brain will do anything to divert us from feeling it. And that's where you get the headache or the neck pain or the whatever's happening for anybody out there, is you get the symptom in order to protect you and distract you from that which feels unsurvivable by your brain and your nervous system. So the reason why I'm doing this whole primer right now, Heather, is because your journal speak practice is not a life sentence. It's not something you need to do every day for now until the end of time. I rarely need to journal speak. I'll go through stages where I do it a lot, but like in a normal month, I won't journal speak at all. You know, when I have no pain and no super anxiety and no insomnia or whatever the things that ail me, I won't do it. But it's a tool in my toolkit. And when I get a symptom, and I get them all the time because there's no cure for the human condition, and we all should expect that part of human life is feeling things in our bodies, it's no big thing, I will take to the page. Now, you're early on in this, relatively. Yes. And your reservoir, honey, is sometimes going to be right at the top. And it's so simple. Like when we look at it like this, it's just a scientific process of putting a ladle into the reservoir and dumping it off. And that happens most easily in a journal speak practice, because the way you just described it is perfection. You know, like you're doing a free write, you're getting super honest, you're saying things you would never say out loud, you're dumping it, meaning like you're just deleting the document when you're done or erasing it from your phone. So there's no one that's ever going to see it or find it. And it's really just seriously basic cause and effect. If the reservoir is down a few inches below the top, you're not going to get pain. And like, and there are things when the reservoir is near the top that will trigger us into short pain events. So one thing that Heather mentioned to me before we jumped on air is that this previous week leading up to the podcast, she was having a little tinges of symptoms, you know, a little bit of neck pain here and there, slight headache. I actually forget exactly what you were having, but it doesn't matter because none of these things are material for me, because one thing is interchangeable with the other. And I said, oh my God, Heather, that is so common for people to report to me who are coming onto the podcast that the week before the podcast, they start getting symptoms, because it's like the anticipation of coming on and all the meaning and all the reflection on your story and self-reflection and blah, blah, blah. And that's so normal. But the reason it's happening is because probably you've been less diligent about the practice, so your reservoir's a little up. And the thing is, like, there's no shame in it at all. That's the whole point of this work, to extract all the shame from it and to realize here we are having human life. Okay, you know, it's stressful. And there are so many things that trigger us back into childhood stuff that's unresolved. And it feels super real in the moment, but we're really actually enacting something that happened a long time ago. I mean, that's really, really basic psychology. And so it's happening. Oh, well, you know, it's not a tragedy. You get to the journal speak, you lower the reservoir, you go days to weeks with no symptoms, and then maybe it crops back up. And like, so what? I think one of the most important things I could say, one of my favorite people in the world, my friend Daniel, his mantra in life is who fucking cares? And I honestly think it's hilarious because it's like he of course cares. He cares deeply. He's one of the most caring people I know. But like if you take yourself just a tad less seriously and like you're just like, all right, who fucking cares? And you don't go so deeply into all of your manufactured drama that we all have, including pain, it makes it a lot easier to do this process. So how does that all sit for you, Heather?
There's something that you said that just like, I just wrote it down and like circled it because I think the last week, you know, as I've been, you know, feeling this anxiety, the main like brain loop that I have is, oh my God, am I going to trigger a migraine because I'm stressed out right now? Like, oh my God, is this going to happen? And you said, you know, not controllable, like these things that happen that are like not controllable, like the migraine is one of the things for me that I feel like is not controllable. And I just don't think I ever made that connection. Like I knew that, like, I know it's like a fear thing that I have for myself now that, cause they just come and I can't control when they're going to happen, but it's here and I have to deal with it. And it's like this fear because I'm so early in this practice of feeling the pain again. And the mantra that I, or the brain loop that I was also stuck on really early on is, oh my God, I'm going to feel like this forever. And so the fact that like, I couldn't control the pain and like, I can't control when the migraine comes. I think both of those things are like wrapped in my drama story about, you know, when these things happen again, like what it's going to be like. And that was just such a light bulb moment for me because I just hadn't connected that dot yet.
That's great. That's so important. And another thing that like we can add on to that is like, here's the situation with symptoms. You can expect them. Like, to not expect to have symptoms, even though we are so bifurcated as a society and we're taught that like your emotional world's your emotional world and your physical world and they shall never meet. And so because of that, if you woke up one morning and you're in an irritable mood, right? Like everything's just rubbing you the wrong way. Your husband's trying to be nice and you just want him to shut up. And like you get to work and everyone's like annoying you. You wouldn't be like, oh my God, this is a tragedy. You know, I'm ill. I'm a terrible person. I'll be irritable for the rest of my life. Like you would never think that.
No.
You'd be like, you know, I'm having like a grumpy day. Jesus, Heather, get your shit together. Like go like take a walk, have a cup of coffee, like whatever it's going to be. But you wake up with a headache and it's like, oh my goodness, like I'm sick forever. That is so – we need to adjust our thinking because it's exactly the same. Sometimes we feel things in our hearts and sometimes we feel things in our bodies and they are literally interchangeable. Your bad mood and your headache are the same thing. Your headache is just expressing that which your nervous system and brain deem – less survivable. So like if your bad mood is attached to your husband is annoying you, and I know he's amazing. I had know nothing about him, just kidding. But the point is like I'm using him because I know you have a husband. And like what your brain and your nervous system might say in a very immature, primitive way is, yeah, but I don't want to get divorced and I'm stuck with him. So being irritated at him doesn't feel safe. Mm-hmm. So what feels safe? A headache. And I know that might sound silly for people who like are like, but a headache is ruining my life. Actually, for your nervous system, it sounds right on. And so when you expect things like that and you aren't a child, you aren't a five-year-old, which is basically the most primitive nervous system responses are the brain level of a five-year-old. It's like it's a good guy or it's a bad guy. It's safe or it's not safe. And that's the way it saves our life. So like we're okay with that, but we we have a developed brain on top of that primitive system that can reason and can have perspective and can pause. And so when you have this fear of the symptom, you have to pause and say, okay, obviously whatever's going on, whether I know it or not, because some of this stuff lives beyond, below consciousness, whatever's going on is being deemed unsafe. So I'm getting this neck pain or this twinge of horrible anxiety or, you know, the beginnings of a migraine. Like, I see what's happening here. Okay, calm down, clear the decks. It's totally normal. There's nothing more scary about this than there is about the irritable mood. Let me get to my journal, speak if I can. If I can't possibly at the moment, let me just self-soothe, do some mantras, like remember what Nicole said, remember the science behind this, chill a little bit, left foot, right foot, breathe, get through my day. You know, that's the way to normalize it so you don't have to be so scared.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny that you say, you know, your bad mood and your headache are the same things, because that's why when I started this, I said that, like, I think this started for me, you know, it started officially in January, right? That's when I had the pain, but like the bad mood started much earlier on, like all of last year. I can't remember feeling like, I remember at the end of last year saying to my husband, I was like, wow, I just want to feel joy again. Like, I haven't felt joy in so long. And like, I had been in, you know, a pretty like negative place for many, many, many months. And it was, I felt like I couldn't climb out of it. And so it's, I almost, you know, as I've been rationalizing, like how all of this went down, I'm like, well, maybe the pain was a good thing, because I now know that these bad moods aren't normal. Like, not sleeping well isn't normal. And doing the things I was doing, like, weren't good for me. And it made it, like, it forced me to slow down in some ways so that I could take a look at myself and take a look at, like, what was on the inside that wasn't working for me anymore. And so, like, it was the signal for me that, like, what you're doing is, it's not working. And like, we need to try something else. And I feel grateful for that I even had the warning bell go off to be able to do this work and like look inside at, you know, what had gone on in my childhood and look at how I was being triggered every day by certain things, into this perpetual bad mood. And then, you know, headache that lingered every day.
It's so true. I mean, if you think about it the way you just laid it out, logically, if you're in a bad mood for a year, I mean, we're being reductive, but yeah, Let's just say it like that. Like, if you're in a bad mood for a year and your nervous system gets to the point where they're like, okay, this isn't sustainable. Because if you really think about it on a granular level, being in a bad mood for a long period of time can ruin your relationships. And if you look at this through the lens of evolutionary biology, we can't as human beings not be in relationship because we'll die. You know, if you look at like the human being, we need to be in community. We need people to care for us. We can't be alone, both emotionally and physically, or else we'll die. We need resources. Like, this is going back to early, early days of human existence. And so we still keep those kind of urgencies. And so it's, let's say there's some unconscious process where your nervous system understands that you've been in an irritable place for too long. Well, how does it save your life? Well, think about it. It's like so beautiful. It almost gives me like it brings me to tears. The beauty of the perfection of it. What happens when we're in pain? Well, first of all, we soften. Second of all, we're able to ask for help. Our mood becomes a softer one, because being irritable and in pain doesn't work. We have to be kind if we're going to, you know, get the help and support that we need. And we get to prioritize ourselves. You know, we get to lay down, we get to take a minute, we get to ask for that time, we get to take a leave from a job that maybe isn't right for us. Like, it's poetic how the pain actually does save us, but it's also insanely not the way we want to live. And so all of that put together makes so much sense for your particular story.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I think I felt like really begrudging about it for obviously while I was in pain, I couldn't, everyone was like, this is an opportunity for you to prioritize yourself. And I was like, but what about all these other things that I wanted to do? Like, do I not get to do those things now? And the answer is, you can absolutely do the things you want. And doing the work of understanding yourself better and taking care of yourself should trump all of that. Because if you don't have your health, and your ability to like move throughout the things that you want, then, you know, it's, I don't know. It made me realize that I was prioritizing all the wrong things. And now I feel like I just have this opportunity to prioritize all the things that I want. And I don't know what all those things are right now. So I feel like I'm on this like path of exploration, which is kind of fun and also a little scary.
Yeah, of course. And here we are living life, right? It's here to be lived. So one thing I wanted to point out is that you mentioned that you could feel grateful for the pain. A lot of people feel like there's no fucking way they're going to feel grateful for any of this. And they think that at the beginning. And then pretty much you've listened to all my podcasts. Almost every person says, and I feel grateful for the pain because it got me to my knees and it opened doors that I never would have thought I needed to open. And I just want to connect that because, you know, one of the things I'm currently writing a book, and so I'm always like looking back on what's the most important things to consider. And one of the things that is very important is the concept of why pain is necessary. Because I think people really need to understand that your body is not against you. Your body is not keeping you from the things that you want. Your body is enacting a response that is necessary for your survival. And it reminds me of what you said about the irritable mood versus the pain, because if you think about pain, when you're running in a field and you step in a hole and you break your ankle, okay? If you didn't feel searing pain from breaking that bone inside your body, you would just keep running. And if you kept running, you could potentially damage your bone and your ligaments permanently to the point where you would never walk again. And if you look at that from a perspective of early man and woe man, that would make you die because as soon as you're laying there in the open field, something's going to come and eat you. And so pain in its very nature is truly the kindest and most loving protective response that your brain and your nervous system can hand you. And some people mistake this work for meaning that the pain is in your head. The pain is in your body. But where's it coming from? The only way you ever feel anything is from the nervous system informing the brain to send a signal. It doesn't matter. I mean, even if you break a bone, that's how it works. You know, the bone sends a signal to the nervous system that sends a signal to the brain that sends a signal back to the body. Like that's just science. And so I just kind of wanted to highlight that you said that because it personifies that situation of pain being protective and actually loving, because I don't want people to stay stuck in the story that their body is against them. Did you ever find yourself there?
Oh yeah. I thought for the longest time that I just, well, not for the longest time because it hasn't been that long, but I thought that I was going to feel like this forever and my body was never going to be the same and I was never going to be able to work out again. I had all of these like stories and dramas that I had concocted about the pain never going away. And my husband was like, you'll be okay. Like, I promise you, you're going to be okay. Like, we're going to get through this. And I just, those first couple of months, I was like, no, I'm not going to be okay. Like, I am the pain now. Like, and the pain is me. Like, that's just how I felt until I discovered some of this work and was like, we're going to make this happen. We're going to heal because I like just couldn't. Like I want to live so badly that I was like, I have some things that I have to do for myself to get back to a good place. And, you know, now that I, you know, can look backwards, I'm grateful because the pain made me leave the job. The pain made me reconnect with all of my friends that I had been neglecting for years, like because I was prioritizing my job. And, you know, the pain also made me realize that I have all of these like ties, that these untethered things from my childhood and these loops, these habit loops that I find myself in that are all tied to my childhood, that like I don't have to behave that way anymore. So like I don't have to behave that way just because I've always behaved that way. And it's been really freeing to let go of the story that the pain is now my life.
Yes. All right. Well, you're opening up a really great door because I know you mentioned at the end of your email that you sent to me that you wanted to talk more about inner child work. So why don't you, as much as you're comfortable, share with me what you're referring to when you say this, these loops of behavior to connected to your childhood. Like, help me understand the things that might still be keeping you stuck.
Yeah. I think it's so interesting because I've always considered myself a really independent, strong-willed kind of person. Like, I think that's why I stayed in that job for so long, because I was like, I'm going to get this done. Like, I'm going to see it through, like whatever it may be. But what I hadn't realized is that, you know, driving the force really driving that kind of grit or that kind of, you know, perseverance was really like feeling overlooked as a child and feeling like my parents didn't see me, and there was all kinds of chaotic things going on in my household as a kid. And the second part of that for me was also like I had all of this anger in me that I had just never expressed, because expressing anger when I was a kid was like a big no-no in my house. And also like my parents expressed anger a lot. Like I grew up in, you know, a one-bedroom apartment in the city, and you know, there were times where we didn't sleep at home because there was fighting. And, you know, I had said to a lot of people, I have said, and like, I still believe this, that like my childhood made me as strong as I am. But like the flip side of that is I have learned how to cope in all of these ways that are actually like keeping emotions stuck inside of me. I had had this executive coach 2 years ago who said to me, like, you're really angry in this session with me. Like, why can't you like, you know, express that anger in ways that are like productive? And I just realized that I couldn't. Like in the moment I would feel the anger, I would like look at the person that was making me angry, and then I would put it to the side so that I could move on. And like that buildup of like anger and shame, it just kept growing until, like, as you say, the reservoir was full and like had nowhere else to go. And I had all of this anger that I was trying to express by like doing crazy like HIIT workouts, but it's still inside of me in some ways, that the like inability to like really express anger and like feeling shame about that, like shame about even being angry because of how it was when I was growing up.
Yes, yes, it totally makes sense, especially in the space, in the physical restrictions. If you're growing up in a one-bedroom apartment, you can't escape the anger around you.
No.
And so the only way to do it is to shut down and to not allow it to infiltrate you. And then part of the side effect of that is you shut yourself down. When you have autonomy, you shut yourself down because you didn't build the muscle. You didn't build the muscle to healthily express yourself. You were not received. And that is, by the way, the story of so many of us. So there's no shame in it. You know, so few of our parents really knew exactly how to let us have the full spectrum of our emotions. You know, maybe that parenting is happening more now. Maybe not. Maybe it's just human nature that it's so hard for us to allow our children to be as upset as they need to be because it's too upsetting for us or it's too triggering for us. I mean, I really have such empathy for all sides of it, even in my own story. Even when I look back at my father and I think, God, he really fucked me up. But I'm like, you know what? I actually know what he was going through, you know? So in terms of inner child work, Heather, how much have you tried? How much do you understand it?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I haven't tried much yet. And I think I'm still just scratching the surface. I feel like I have a lot to learn still.
Okay, great. So let's talk about it a little. This is a great way to wrap our session because it leaves you with something really concrete to do. And it leaves us on a really hopeful note because I think inner child work is one of the most life-changing things that I've ever done for myself and I've ever led people through. And for you and for those of you guys listening, we'll just scratch the surface of it here, but I do have a whole inner child retreat recording available on my website under, if you click on retreats, you'll see a retreat recording tab. So if anyone wants to really learn more about this and they think this is just too small of a taste, I want to offer that to make sure people know where to go. Okay. The thing with inner child work, first of all, I just want to debunk the fact that it's light, because I think like it has sort of a new agey vibe with that word inner child. And it's like dead serious work. It's really transformative therapeutic work. And so I always like to start there and say, like, this is no joke stuff to do for yourself that will really, really change your life. Because as you so articulately pointed out, Heather, there are habits and patterns and cycles that we just keep walking through because it's just what we've always done. And we always do that which we were taught, and we were taught through our experiences and our environment. So it's really good insight. It's a great place to start just by knowing, you know, I'm sure you've heard me teach that a general rubric for my work is allow, name, stay, and release. And allow is really just understanding, like, oh, I see, this is what's happening. This is what happens to people, which is we're raised in a certain, you know, there's certain fertilizer in our soil, and that's how we end up continuing to act, right? So inner child work is oftentimes confused with talking to your inner child, even though that is involved. People often think that inner child work is going back to those little scared, sad places of ourselves and saying, hey, it's going to be okay. I love you now. I'm a grown up now. And that it's not that that's not what it is, but that's not the real transformative part of what it is. Inner child work is about listening. And so the way I teach inner child work is that you do a short visualization. So you might close your eyes and you might pick the child that presents herself to you, because I've done inner child work so many millions of times, and every time I do it, a different kid comes forth. It could be a toddler. It could be a teenager. It could be a 20-something-year-old. And honestly, there's inner child work that I've done at the age of 51 where I'm working with a 32-year-old inner child, because it's the person who had her first baby at 30 and her second baby at 32 and was super lost on how to do this, you know? And so there's a kid in there. And so it's really just also like holding a very broad and flexible definition of what it means to work with your inner child. That's the first thing. So anyway, you close your eyes, you kind of calm yourself down, you do some breathing. I'm closing my eyes right now as I talk to you, just getting myself in that space. I invite you to do the same. And just find who comes, you know, like maybe it involves something that's made you feel insecure lately or a challenge. But there are infinite little kids inside of us that have had experiences. And just whomever comes up, the first thing you do is you see her. You know, we cannot connect or help anyone that we can't see. So the first thing you do is you see her, and so you take note, what's she wearing? You know, how's she wearing her hair? Is she wearing shoes? Is she holding something? You know, if it's a kid, it might be a stuffed animal. If it's a teenager, it could be, you know, a backpack or a cigarette, you know, whatever. It's, you know, where do you find her? Get a real sense of her. And when you do, you ask her, what is it like to be you? What is it like? What is it like with your parents? What is it like at school? What is it like at your job? What is it like with your siblings? What is it like in your one-bedroom apartment? What is it like with your boyfriend or girlfriend? What is it like with your addictive, secret, hidey things that you don't tell anyone about? What's it like to be you? Because I want to tell you something. I think you are amazing, and I am fascinated. All I want to do is hear. And what's really, really key in this work is you don't try to fix, you don't try to save, you don't try to tell her that everything's going to be okay. You only listen, and you really give her, and this is where you pick up your journal speak, and you give her, like, you know, I say put 20 minutes on the clock, because that is the way, you know, the time limit that I think is a really great sweet spot for journal speak. But if it goes longer, that's fine. And you let her tell you her story. And it's so transformative, because what happens, similar to the fact that your pain has eased, as you start hearing these different kids inside of you, what happens is, and it's like magic, Heather, you will be in the same situation as you were in, let's say, the week before, and the same person will be treating you the same way, meaning something super triggering or something that reminds you of when you were young, or maybe you don't even know it reminds you of when you were young, but it's like something's irritating inside of you. And you will feel total peace. You will look at this person carrying on and being like, and you'll be like, all right, buddy, it's good for you. You can finish anytime you want and I'll be going. Like, instead of, oh my God, I cannot freaking believe this. How dare he talk? Like, it is magical the way hearing and receiving and accepting these parts of ourselves change the way we respond to triggers in the now. So how does that land for you?
I can't wait to do it. And the version of me that I imagined in my head was the sweet little 13-year-old in a softball uniform and cleats with a helmet on, and my curly hair kind of like spilling out of the helmet. So I like both that image of myself really made me smile, and I can't wait to meet her again by doing some of this work.
It's so amazing. I'm so glad that like you felt that it felt light to you, because, and when I say light, I don't mean light, not heavy. I mean doable. Yeah. Because like this is the stuff, and you're at this stage of your journey, Heather, which is why I really liked your email and called you on for a real time heal, where you're open to doing this deeper work because your pain is not owning you anymore, you know? And I think what's really important for everyone out there is if your pain is owning you today, if that's where you are, that's totally a fine place to be. It's a great place to be. You're about to be opened to everything that's next for you. This is your life. It's not to be adored. It's not to be mastered. It's to be lived. It's to be partnered with. It's to be loved and enjoyed. And it's presence in the moment. Like, that's what we're here for. And so if the pain is in your face right now, it's okay. You know, do the work. Look up my resources, listen to this podcast. I have an online course you can take. Like, there's so many things that you can do to help yourself. Come to Omega. You know, I'm running, I know you probably know this, but I'm running a retreat from June 25th through the 30th in upstate New York, just over a month from now. And come, you know, like, there are so many things you can do for yourself if you're really struggling. And if you are at the place that Heather is, where you are opened now, as this place in your journey to do this deeper work, that's when you really say, oh my God, not only I'm a little grateful for the pain in retrospect, you literally fall to your knees in gratitude for the pain, because you're like, I can't believe there was so much unlived life inside of me that now I can experience.
Gosh, I mean, yes, all of those things, yes. And I think the other thing I learned is there's no one size fits all. Like, my journey is going to be different than everyone else's. And like you said, Nicole, like, I'm so grateful to be on this journey, like, beyond grateful. Like, I just, without having this pain and this experience, like, I probably would still be waking up every day in a bad mood, waking up feeling like, why am I doing this? And really unclear about any of the things I wanted. And so I'm just so grateful to you for doing this work and getting it out there so that it could be accessible to people like me who can just find you online.
That was the idea. You know, it's funny. I used to just be in private practice, and little by little, between people kind of telling me, Nicole, you cannot just contain this in the four walls of your office, and then the internet at large, and COVID, to be honest with you, as much as COVID was a very tragic time for our globe, it was a great time for my work because it gave me the confidence to bring it really deeply and pervasively online. And that has been one of the reasons that you found it. So all of our journeys are just continuing to evolve bigger and wider and deeper and, you know, with more possibilities. And it's all so exciting to me. And when I talk to someone like you, I just get inspired, because all I want to do is have as many people as possible in the world know that this work is an option for them. And you, Heather, today are helping with that.
Thank you. And I feel super grateful for everyone that came before me, because all of those podcasts are what got me through some of the toughest times. So all the folks that came on to speak about their journey, like, just so grateful to all of you as well. Feel almost like you're on this journey with me, even though I don't know any of you.
Yeah, no, it's so true. And I'll say it right now, because I'm always taking submissions. If you find yourself in the place that Heather finds herself, it is the perfect space for a real-time heal, meaning you are not totally new to this work, because I need, for the purposes of a podcast, you know, it's like everything has to make sense. It has to be someone who has a sense, because then we can do some real deep work online and help other people. If you find yourself having gotten to a certain plateau or like really getting it, but then feeling like you're missing something, write to me at thecureforchronicpain@gmail.com. And tell me your story. And maybe you can be one of these people, because Heather came on because she's grateful for those who have come before her. And she wants to be one of those people that's helping others.
Yes. And it's a gift, an absolute gift. Thank you for it.
Well, you are so welcome. Heather, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your experience, sharing your questions, sharing your gratitude. It's all so important. So thank you again.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Nicole.
All right. Well, for all of you out there, obviously, you know that this is The Cure for Chronic Pain with me, Nicole Sachs. If you're enjoying the podcast, please hop over to iTunes and rate and review it. It helps people like Heather find the podcast. And as you can hear, that is so important. And until next time, I will see you then. Bye-bye.